It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The coronavirus is creating new challenges for parents and caregivers. UPMC Children's Hospital is trying to assess what parents need for their children during this crisis. Kristen Ray is a general pediatrician and child health researcher. Kristen, how many families have responded to your survey so far?
We are conducting this survey weekly, and so in our first week we had 1,300 families respond, and then about 800 the second week.
So what are you hoping to find out from this survey?
This one key motivator for this survey was that our community partners started talking with us about how they don't know how much unmet need there is out in the community or who isn't reaching out to them. Sometimes social service agencies, community agencies, they can count the folks who are contacting them, but there's a layer of unmet need underlying that. And we wanted to make sure that we could understand what families need more of. And we anticipated that that might change from one week to the next. So we wanted to try to get a good handle on what was happening, what families needed, and be able to feed that back to inform local response relatively quickly.
You mentioned 2 weeks. So has there been any change in the needs from one week to another at this point so far?
So one thing that was definitely showing up in the first week and the second week was that parents themselves are needing more help, that this is a hard time for parents. And we're hearing lots of stories of families doing amazing things to care for their children and to help their children learn and thrive during this time, but that parents' own emotional, social, and mental well-being is in a rough spot. And so in terms of community response, one thing that has changed is we've worked with many local experts in this area to highlight a range of options for families, from kind of virtual therapy to online apps, local organizations working in this space. So trying to give new options for families based on what they're telling us.
I see from early results that 50% of parents said the pandemic has resulted in job loss or income loss. Do you know if that influences their feelings about being able to help their children feel safe, happy, and evenly emotionally well-adjusted?
Yeah, we've looked at results based on some factors such as whether families had job loss. And when we look at families who have had job loss, they are reporting more difficulty with kind of material needs, as you might expect when someone has a loss of income. So for those families, adequate food and meeting bills is still a bigger issue. But in terms of some other areas, supporting children and being well-adjusted socially, mentally, emotionally, helping their children learn and be safe, feeling safe, happy, and loved, actually, some of those families with job loss are still reporting very similar rates to families that haven't had job loss.
You gather this information. How do you want it to be able to be used to actually help families?
We didn't want to just collect data. We wanted this to be about action and improving circumstances for families. You know, we're working with partners to identify resources that exist for issues that families are raising, and we're creating an ever-growing directory that's on the website of the survey. But we're also listening closely for the places where families aren't finding the resources that they need, or where they're feeling like they're falling through the cracks, or there's not a program meant for them. And so we're engaging in conversations with partners about those circumstances.
Kristen Ray is a general pediatrician and child health researcher at UPMC Children's. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Journalists here in Pittsburgh and across the country are doing everything they can to bring you stories about the pandemic. David Green, the co-host of NPR's Morning Edition, is no exception. David, I'm in a walk-in closet in my home. Where are we connecting with you?
To be honest, my living room, Kevin. This is where I've been doing the show for the past few weeks. And, you know, we start recording stuff at 4 a.m. So in the beginning, I was thinking, like, am I going to wake my neighbors up upstairs? Am I going to keep my wife up? But so far, it's worked. You know, I light some candles. I sit here mostly in the dark with, you know, the microphone there and try to make it feel like somehow close to normal.
How have you and Morning Edition tried to blend the daily news updates from our officials, our politicians, while you're still exploring how the pandemic is affecting individuals, people's daily lives?
I mean, I think that's the balance that we have really tried to find. And one of the things that I have found really inspiring is how our staff, you know, we're all living through this and we're all feeling it. And I think they've really channeled a lot of the pain and the tough stuff that they're all going through into empathy that I think you hear on the air.
What interview do you think you've done over the last month or 6 weeks that's really stuck with you?
Oh, man, I can't. There's a guy named Rocky Walker who is a hospital chaplain in New York City. And it was one of the most difficult conversations I have ever had. I mean, he is basically trying to be there for families as best he can who are trying to say goodbye to someone who is dying. They can't be in the hospital with their loved one, you know, certainly not in the room. And he'll be pointing, you know, his phone to take video of someone in their final hours to try and let the family see virtually and say goodbye. And just listening to him describe that experience, I left that just really both sad, but so impressed. I just want to meet him at some point and give him a hug.
I think people all over the country can identify with that because of, I don't know, frustration that they can't be with their loved ones when they are getting ready to pass.
Yeah. Yeah. And not just that, but, you know, be with your loved ones if you're just worried about them. You know, a lot of us have, you know, parents and family members who are older, and there's just no way we want to put them at risk. But I think we miss them so much.
Do you think listeners want to hear other non-COVID stories on Morning Edition, on All Things Considered, on NPR?
You know, it's a good question. Obviously, most of what we're doing right now is about this story and how every aspect of life around this planet has totally changed. But we still try to mix in, you know, authors, musicians. I talked to Willie Nelson's son, Lucas, a few weeks ago, and you know, we were talking about his new album, but also talking about what it's like to be a musician hunkered down with his family, including his elderly father, Willie. And so, you know, there's no way to hide from this story. And I think the key for us is when we are covering something else, to not pretend that thing is the same as it was a few months ago. And if this story sort of blends into everything in some way, I think that's just a acknowledging what reality is around us.
Morning Edition co-host David Green, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, Kevin. Be safe. Thanks a lot.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania has experienced rocketing unemployment during the coronavirus pandemic. Rural Elk and Cameron counties, located northwest of State College, have the highest rate of unemployment claims per capita, nearly twice the state average. Keystone Crossroads' Laura Benshoff has more on why this area has been hit so hard and why turning on the gears of the economy again won't be easy.
Elk County gets its name from the animals that wander through the area's lush forests, but it's also known for the powdered metal industry.
It's just so common around here. We all grew up with it, but once you get out of the air, everybody says, "What? Powdered metal? What's powdered metal?"
That's Rodney Brennan of Metco Industries, a powdered metal company in the small city of St. Mary's.
Exactly what it sounds like. They take metal and pulverize it into powder.
After it's pulverized, the metal gets pressed into molds and fired at a high temperature.
Powder metal in general is known for engine parts, transmission parts, rocker arms and engines and transmissions, big gears, things of that nature.
He says the company is able to operate during the shutdown because some parts go to industries considered life-sustaining. But even so, way fewer orders are coming in these days, and they laid off about 10% of staff. Dave Parsons is with Catalyst Corporation, another local powdered metal company.
We've had a lot of people on furlough. We were right around 100 total, and we're probably 30 now.
More than 1.5 million Pennsylvanians have filed for unemployment compensation since the coronavirus pandemic began. While the numbers are highest in urban areas like Philadelphia, this rural, low-population region has proportionally been hit the hardest. Dependence on one industry for jobs is part of the reason, says Barry Denk, director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania.
They're one of few counties where manufacturing is one of the top employers in a rural county. And so whatever downturn that that segment of the manufacturing industry gets hit with, it really has a sizable impact.
It's not just manufacturing that's been hit. Gennaro Aiello is the president of the Ridgeway Elk County Chamber of Commerce.
The hospital's another big employer, healthcare, and you know, people aren't getting procedures, especially elective procedures. They just laid off just locally in Elk County, I think 66 people.
Unemployment's been low here for most of the last decade, although it ticked up in the last couple of years. Rodney Brennan from Metco blames Governor Wolf now, saying he went too far with his shutdown order.
I certainly think the governor had got carried away and made knee-jerk reactions without understanding the impact.
But it's not common to hear skepticism about the seriousness of the virus here. The mayor of St. Mary's, Lou Radkowski, says his constituents are taking the pandemic seriously and staying home, not like the protesters who recently made news in Harrisburg.
We have five ICU beds here in town. We have, four ICU beds. We have five ventilators. So I get it. It's on us to make sure that we're successful at it.
But he says Elk County has been successful in containing the virus. So far, it's only had two confirmed cases, although testing isn't widespread. Radkowski says it's time to take action against the other threat, an economy in a tailspin.
Why not have that discussion with us to say, hey, you know, let's try to ease some of the other pain that is out there.
Governor Wolf has indicated this part of the state may see easing of shutdown restrictions first, as early as May 8th. But the question here and across the state is, will people be ready to go out even when things open up?
People are so scared of getting this virus.
Tony Williamson runs a gymnastics gym in the area.
People are like, we're not going anywhere, we're not going anywhere, we're not doing anything. So people like me that are counting on, oh, yay, we can start our business back up. The people that we had are like, no way.
Williamson's applied for small business loans and unemployment for sole proprietors, but nothing's come through. She relies on her fiancé and adult son for financial support since her gym closed down. And she checks the IRS website daily, hoping for some news about her delayed stimulus check. And she feels helpless when it's not there.
I get on that computer and I go to that stupid IRS site and I look on to see where my payment is, where's my stimulus, whatever, whatever, every stinking morning. And who do I contact? Who can I call?
She says fear of the unknown for her business and her community makes the idea of returning to normal feel far away. Laura Benchoff, Keystone Crossroads.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's unclear when high school athletics will begin practice and competition again. Spring seasons were canceled and off-season sports aren't allowed to practice until summer at the earliest. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Schneider spoke with Tim O'Malley, the outgoing executive director of the Western Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic League, about the loss student-athletes are experiencing.
You know, although interscholastic athletics play a very vital role in what it is that the kids do and what it is that they certainly want to do, it's a small part of what it is that we as a society are being confronted with. And it's a shame, and it's a shame what it is that we as a group are all going through. So I don't want to minimize what it is and the impact that it's had on interscholastic athletics and academic pursuits of young people. But again, I think that it's a very small part of what it is that we're all enduring today.
Definitely. I think, though, for teenagers, I mean, this is what a lot of kids look forward to, right? This is why a lot of students are motivated to be good students, is that they get to play their sport.
Well, I think kids are motivated, you know, academically. The seniors had looked forward to their prom. The seniors had looked forward to their graduation. And obviously the senior student athletes that pursued or accepted the challenge of interscholastic athletics had looked forward to a spring season. And all of those things, unfortunately, have been negatively impacted by this pandemic. And these kids will rebound, they'll adjust, and they'll be telling their grandkids about it and how it is that they adjusted to it, you know, 40, 50 years from now.
Is there any way to make up spring season sports?
No. The PIAA has discontinued them. Spring sports, as we had come to know them, have been canceled.
How will this impact, you know, seniors who are hoping for scholarships?
The word scholarship's a misnomer. Most of those student athletes that were being pursued by, that had an interest in going on and continuing their athletic involvement at the collegiate level, if in fact they are scholarship type, those kids have been identified. Most kids going into their senior year in their spring sports have identified the postgraduate institutes that they wish to attend and what it is that they're going to pursue, be it academically and or athletically. So they're taken care of. That won't be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any idea of when or what the fall season will look like?
Interscholastic sports cannot begin until at least July 1st. There can be no conditioning. There's no off-season training. Everything is off the table through June 30. And again, that's going to be a wait and see as it relates to the governor and what the governor does and where it is that this state is and where it is that we go back. And if you ask me on a personal basis, would I have a concern? I do in regard to what it is that's being talked about from the intercollegiate level and what it is that their concerns are. And will that matriculate to the high school level? That's something that I think remains to be seen, but it obviously is of a concern.
Do you have any idea of how many jobs in Western Pennsylvania have been either lost or impacted that were tied to high school sports? Because, I mean, you have officials, coaches, bus drivers. There has to be kind of this domino effect, I assume, happening.
Well, I'm sure there is. You know, from the coaching standpoint, I believe the governor stepped in and indicated that all the public school spring coaches should be paid for their services. They typically would have been. Obviously, the PI registered game officials didn't have any events to work so that they couldn't do that. Again, whoever it is that the school districts might independently contract with to transport the student athletes from point A to point B, again, that would be certainly up to them in regard to you know, the fulfillment of those contractual obligations. But certainly there's a trickle down effect, as it is with anything that's been postponed and canceled. So a number of people have been impacted.
That was Tim O'Malley, the executive director of the WPIAL, speaking with WESA's Sarah Schneider. And for today, that is The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, Kylie Kozinski, and Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.